Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, September 20th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my 47 years of doing therapy. And these tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner of the page, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. It's called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and a tool I can use to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click it, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to the App Store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains this reality management worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one that have been curated out of the past 10.5 years of Mindshifter radio shows, internet podcasts, whatever you want to call them. And they include actual examples of people being stepped through the worksheet process, testimonials about how the application of the worksheet process has improved people's lives, and discussion about how a tool that is so seemingly simple and direct can be so effective. We are also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 263rd day of the year, but I back us up a little bit to a couple days ago when the Course in Miracles workbook lessons have a writing on the question, what is the body? The writing says, the body is a fence that the offspring of creation imagines he has built for the purpose of separating parts of himself, his total self, higher self, capital S self, from other parts. It is within this fence that we think that we live, to die as it decays and crumbles. Within this fence, we think that we are safe from love. Identifying with this safety, we regard ourselves as what safety is. How else could we be certain that we remain within the body, keeping love outside. So the idea in this commentary is that we created this body in the sense of separation that it provides as a defense against something. But the only thing there is the love of the creation and the creative energy itself. And so what's a better use of the body? The body could be a means by which we return to sanity. Though it was made to fence us off from hell without escape, yet has the goal of heaven been exchanged for the pursuit of hell? Thus, the offspring of creation extends his hand to each brother to help him walk along the road. And now the body is holy. Now it serves to heal the mind that it was made to kill. So we want to understand that the body is not what it seems. And every time we use it in a way that seems to separate us from others, that's a misuse of our ability to perceive. Lesson 236, we'll get to in a minute. Lesson 261, God is my refuge and security. I will identify with what I think is refuge and security. I will behold myself where I perceive my strength. And let me not seek for idols. I choose to be as you created me, Creator, and I find my true self as you created it. Lesson 262 reads, let me perceive no differences today. We are all one. There is no separation. Who we are, one would recognize this day. We are who would recognize this day the truth about ourselves. We would come home and rest in unity, for there is peace, and nowhere else can peace be sought and found. Today's lesson reads, my holy vision sees all things as pure. Father, your mind created all that is. Your spirit entered into it. Your love gave life to it. And would I look upon what you created as if it could be made sinful? Well, let's just say it positively. I will not look upon this way. What you made cannot be in error. I would not perceive such dark and fearful images. A madman's dream is hardly fit to be my choice. Instead of all the loveliness with which you blessed creation, all its purity, its joy, its eternal quiet home in you, Creator. And while we still remain outside the gate of heaven, let us look on all we see through holy vision and the eyes of the Christ. Let all appearances seem pure to us, that we may pass them in innocence and walk together to our Father's house as brothers and the holy offspring of the Creator. So, lesson 263 in the Course in Miracles experiment by Pam Grout reads, look beyond the madman's dream. She quotes Twyla Tharp as saying, sometimes I use X-ray vision to look into the dancer and see who this dancer is right now at this exact moment in time. Pam writes, like Superman, I was raised in Kansas and have a thing for wearing tights. Unlike my fellow Kansan, I rarely leap tall buildings or fly. I also don't have X-ray vision. But I do have what A Course in Miracles Lesson 263 calls holy vision. It allows me to see beyond appearances. It allows me to see beyond lack and limitation. It allows me to see the reality that is covered up with my distorted thinking. My brother, JC, was so good at using holy vision that people who hadn't walked in years literally got up and busted a jaunty nane. I, too, possess this superpower. It's like a magic wand. And when I commit to use it, reality changes right before my eyes. The ugly morphs into the beautiful, the dark into light, the sadness into joy. Today, I use my superpower to see all things as perfect, pure, and pristine. I use it to bless everyone I see, to bless everything that crosses my path. And as I look beyond seeming appearances to the incomparable truth beneath the veil, I call forth life and restore all things to their original state of perfection. So that's our Course in Miracles lesson and the commentary from Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment. And as usual, we've got about 50 minutes left to talk about whatever might be of service to you. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. We welcome your comments, your questions, your answers, your suggestions for topics, your suggestions for people that we might interview, either for the Mind Shifters Radio or the On Your Mind podcast, hosted by Journey's Dream, which is available at journeysdream.org. And I will mention again that coming up October 8th, 9th, and 10th is the Integrative Mental Health Summit, which is hosted by Journey's Dream and Mensa Medical. And this will be an opportunity for people to hear from a variety of clinicians and researchers and practitioners who are helping people through their mental health challenges in ways that are not as strict or constricted, let's say, as the conventional medical model would be. So if you know somebody, or if you yourself are struggling with mental health challenges and you've been told, well, you know, it's hopeless, you just need to take this medication for the rest of your life, or we don't have anything that could help you, you might want to tune into the Integrative Mental Health Summit happening October 8th through 10th this year. It's quite the stretch to be involved in a project like that. And there are books to read and processes to explore and one of the challenges with something like this is that lots of people think they have the answer. I love the we had a very creative person attending our Tuesday support group, Mind Shifter support group, years ago, and she said, and I'll paraphrase her because I don't have the writing in front of me, but she did a piece of writing about how a lot of different times in her life she has run across a teacher who found a piece of the truth. And over time, that teacher came to believe that they found the truth. And eventually they came to believe they found the only truth. And then eventually they came to believe they were the truth. And that was the end of the therapeutic relationship. That, you know, when we get full of ourselves, that's when we've lost sight of the truth. When we think we are the truth, or that truth is something that we own or we possess or we have the cornered the market on, that's when truth is lost. Somewhere in the archives, there's a show I did where I was trying to talk about, and I think I read quite a bit of, or at least segments of, the talk that Krishnamurti gave when he disbanded the Order of the Star And the title of the talk was, Truth is a Pathless Land. There is no path to walk in the truth. Can't be known, held, written down, possessed. And the story with Krishnamurti was that he had been discovered, shall we say, by some people from the Theosophical Society, and they were grooming him to be the head of a new religion. And they were hopeful that he was going to make an announcement, finally, I think he was in his early 30s, and they'd been grooming him since his teen years, and they'd formed a society of the Order of the Star and a society of people that felt they were special and they were close, and they all meditated together and they all got messages from the Great White Brotherhood and lots of fancy stuff. And he got to the point where he agreed to do another special talk, and everybody thought, this is it. He's going to come out and tell us that he is the reincarnation of Jesus. And he came out and he said, to begin this talk, I'd like to tell you a story about the devil. The devil and his friend were walking down the street, and they saw someone in front of them bend over and pick something up off the sidewalk. The friend said to the devil, what did that person just pick up? The devil said, oh, they just picked up a piece of the truth. The friend said, oh my gosh, that's going to be really bad for you. And the devil said, not at all. I'm going to let them organize it. And that was the story he used to begin his talk on how truth is a pathless land and how he was disbanding the Order of the Star, basically disbanding the church that they were in the process of building around him. And he was trying to let them know that everything they were doing to try to make him special above others and create a sense that anybody who followed their teachings was better or wiser than somebody else, it was all wrong. It was all in error. And it's one of the things that keeps coming up as I try different therapy styles and tools, and is that many times people think they've got a useful tool, but many times that's just the beginning, and then they start to think theirs is the tool, that this is what everybody needs to do to reach healing or integration or enlightenment or whatever. And that is, in my experience, always a detriment. So we encourage people to do what I do when I'm doing the Mind Shifters radio show is try the tools that Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice make available. Why? Well, because they're free. And, you know, there are no negative side effects. It's not like you're ingesting a poison hoping to get sick or hoping to get healthy. And it's free, and it's something you can apply in your own life soon and often or as needed. And if it works, keep doing it. And if it doesn't work, let it go. Go find another one. Go try Byron Katie's work, or Ho'oponopono, or the Sedona Release Method, or Diedrich Wolsack's Six Steps to Forgiveness, or G.P. Walsh's Inner Reconciliation. Because the more I look into these various tools, the more my eye and ear tells me they're all basically doing the same thing. The more we get out of the conscious logical mind that is trying to tell us that we're right and other people are wrong, or vice versa, we're horrible and other people are so much better, the more we get out of that mind and the more we ask to be shown, we ask our bodies how they're feeling, We ask ourselves to notice what we notice. The more we do that, the more transformation takes place, the more integration, the more healing takes place. And the more we try to live with the cultural bias that other people and things, situations outside of us are causing our upset, and we need to find a way to get them to change, that's the more we do that, the more stuck we get. And the more we move into just observation, active in the moment, questioning and observation, the better our lives get. This happens with Byron Katie's work, where she just has you question any negative belief. Because in her awakening, she realized that she only suffers when she believes her negative thoughts. Well, if you look at the reality management worksheet, it basically does the same thing. It asks you to be clear about what your mind is telling you and how it's blaming other people and situations for its upset, and then cancel all of that and ask to be shown something else. Just watch what happens when you get out of the doing mind and into the observer position that's available to all of us. And what happens is, you know, often nothing short of seemingly miraculous. There's a technique called brain spotting, which basically does the same thing. It uses a very simple technique to notice and have the client notice what they feel in their body, where they feel it in their body, and then how that feeling gets more or less intense when their eyes move to different areas in their field of view. Left, right, up, down, near, far, etc. And with the willingness to experience whatever comes bubbling up or flooding through the mind, and just witness it without giving into the urge to try and change it, powerful healing happens. Well, that's basically the same thing that happens in the reality management worksheet. We just ask to be shown the hidden part of our mind after we've canceled whatever our conscious logical mind says it needs and must have, holding on to grudges or blame. And we cancel that and leave an open space for a different view, for a more integrated wisdom or knowledge to take its place. We ask to be shown the hidden part of our own mind that's actually the one creating the upset, the pain, the suffering, the sadness, the fear, the anger, the hurt. As in most of these techniques, tools, when they start talking about it, they talk about how people are just blown away and wonder, how could this happen? How could I feel so different after basically not doing anything, doing basically nothing? And the answer is because it's not possible to end my emotional and psychological pain by engaging the very process that created my emotional and psychological pain. That's what David Bohm would call sustained incoherence. Creating a problem with the process of the mind and then trying to fix the problem by continuing to engage that same process of the mind. I had a session over the weekend with somebody that I hope to interview on Wednesday. And again, the entire session was about just observing. And when you see this and when you feel this and you say that, what do you notice? Now come back to this and notice this. Now come back to the original. Notice that. What do you notice? It's this, the art of observation and its ability to be transformative is at the core of most every technique I've ever encountered that actually helps people initiate deep, lasting change, profound and lasting change. And I can't get there by thinking my way through it, which is why the somatic therapies are so useful. It is why the worksheet process is so useful. It's why the EFT tapping is so useful, because I'm not trying to change my emotions with EFT tapping. I'm just noticing them and keeping my breath moving and allowing the energies and the insights, if there are any, to come bubbling to the surface. So if you've been involved in any kind of a therapy before and you didn't get very good results, chances are it's because the process was more lopsided than balanced. And by lopsided, I mean focused more on the conscious logical rather than integrating the body sensations, the emotions, and the intellectual processing. So don't give up exploring. One of the ways you might want to explore is to attend the Integrative Mental Health Summit. You can find out more about that at that very website, integrativementalhealthsummit.org. And they ask that you, you know, pay them $25 to get the live access. And I've said several times on the show already, if you're interested or you know somebody else who's interested and would like to attend, but they don't have the $25, have them email me, tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And I'll make sure they get free access to that Integrative Mental Health Summit, the 3 days of talks and panel discussions and breakout sessions, whatever it is. And it's all about trying to get the knowledge of good, effective tools into the hands of the people who need them. And that's what everybody who's involved in putting this summit on is trying to do, whether they're from Mensa Medical or the Journey's Dream non-for-profit. And your help in spreading the word about that is greatly appreciated. And again, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And feel free to join us October 8th through 10th for the virtual summit. From the comfort of your home or car or wherever you have your tablet or laptop or phone, these days it gets easier and easier. Some people say, oh, I miss, you know, not being able to go to the live seminar. But then again, one of the benefits is a lot more people can attend because it's through this Internet platform, because it's virtual rather than literally being there face-to-face. And in these days of people having concerns about health and lots of people packed in public places, it gets rid of that potential excuse. So what's your comment or question? How can we support you? What's a topic that you'd like to have us explore for the last half hour of this show before we start Michael and Jeannie's second hour, or 2 hours, 5 days a week in our current format. And again, our intention is to be of service. So how can we be of service? What is top of mind for you that we could talk about today? I have an interview coming up with Dr. Richard Moss, and he, as we've talked about, has written a couple of books that really focus on a whole new level of awareness and observation. I've lost track of when I'm interviewing. Oh, there it is, on October 6th. But as I'm reading his books, the Mandala of Being, I believe, is one, and Inside Out Healing is another. He's, again, one more person in the line in the list of other people I just talked about who's advocating for just watching, having your intention focused on yourself and being attentive to exactly what's going on in your system, watching your thought without having to be moved by your thought. And every time I read another person who talks about how to harness the power of presence, they say things like, you know, the worst suffering often comes not from the situation, not from what we experience, but from what we tell ourselves about it. Well, in the bottom line observations, one of my observations is what happens to me and around me in my life is nowhere near as important as how I choose to interpret and respond to those events. So watching what we do to ourselves with our thought process, waking up to how our focus of our attention and the thoughts that we pour our mind energy into is the thing that creates our emotional experience and our experience of life in each moment. When we wake up to that and we learn, which it's amazing we weren't taught this earlier, when we learn how to just observe and we learn a series of steps we might take, whether it's beginning with being focused on the breath or beginning with being focused on awareness of things we can see and feel and hear. As we practice learning these things, amazing benefits can accrue. That's why we say to people, please use the worksheet process. Right? Get the practice in. Pieces from his book that I highlighted was that the key is learning to be aware with our feelings and with another person, to feel the sensations and stop thinking about them. Put it another way, I don't give the sensations to my ego. Instead, I learn to just bring awareness to the sensations if I've got an ache or a pain. It's a simple way to talk about Dr. John Sarno, who used to do back surgery and gave it up because he found out that the vast majority of back pain and other body aches and pains was the result of tension myoneural syndrome, which means the mental emotional tensions that I haven't worked through get stored in my body, and when they get activated, they create muscle tension or spasm, and it cuts off blood flow to tissue. And the smallest bit of reduction of oxygen to tissue, maybe even 10%, is enough to initiate excruciating pain. So instead of doing surgeries anymore, instead of recommending people go to the physical therapist and the alternating hot and cold and the deep tissue massage and the electrical stim machines. He started telling people, come to my lecture, learn about how your mind and your body are not separate, learn how your mental, emotional tensions are stored in the body, and that's causing this pain. Well, here it is. Said in another way, we don't give the sensations of pain to our ego. Instead, we learn to bring awareness to them. And he would have people talk to their back pain when their back would spasm or they'd get a stab of pain. Talk to their neck. Talk to the part of the body that's producing a physical ache or pain or a negative symptom and listen, in quotes, listen not with the ears, but listen with your mind and your heart. And the vast majority of people that he did this work with, this educational session with, began having reduction in pain and restoration of motion. And the few people where he would find that they weren't getting any better, he would refer them to a psychologist or a therapist who was trained in the deep unconscious work around trauma, and then they would get better. Because, you know, we know that when people have trauma that locks energies in the system, the stuck energy, the trapped energy, can block our awareness of the memory. And then if I can't get the memory, I can't feel the feelings, I can't release it, I can't get the message it has for me, then it stays trapped in my system. There's one such example of a woman who was, she hit her 40s and started to develop tremendous pain in her legs. And they couldn't find any physical reason for her to be in that much pain. So they assumed, well, she's probably got the autoimmune disease, she's probably got lupus, or she's got fibromyalgia, or she's got chronic fatigue. And they just kept going around and around in circles, but nothing that they had to offer her would give her any benefit. And they just kept saying, you know, you've got to take these medications, and the medications weren't yielding any significant reduction in pain, but they were giving her, you know, a clouded view of the world. Her mind was feeling, you know, foggy, and her head felt all stuffy. And so she quit, and she ended up in the therapist's office who could take a holistic or integrative approach and said, well, while we're doing, you know, letting the doctors look at all of the scans and body scans and everything, let's talk about what your life is like and what your stresses are and where your trigger points are and what your childhood was like, if there were traumas, et cetera. And with the therapy technique that was based in observation and body work and, you know, watching the eye movements, et cetera, what was discovered was that she had a very troubled childhood. And in the early, first few early years, she bonded well with her father, but not her mother. And mother was quite resentful and would be abusive to her whenever father wasn't there. And then as things escalated in the mess between the parents, I think it was like age 5, it was like an automatic switch got thrown and her father turned on her. Well, so when she was doing the deep therapy work that used body realization and eye movements, et cetera, she tapped into how her father, when he would be drunken and angry beginning at age 5, he would whip her with the belt, and the belt buckle would hit the back of her thighs. And so that's a lot like the pain she was going through. And with that realization and the accessing of that trauma and the release of those energies, the physical pain in the legs dissipated over time, the way no amount of medications had been able to make a change. So I'll take a break from my little storytelling and welcome area code 828. Is this Magda?
Hi, yes, Dr. Tim, it is. And I was just wondering if you have ever done an interview with Dr. Gabor Mate?
No,
I think you
no,
can
I have
really...
not. Yeah.
Okay,
well,
you have
Dr. Gabor, Dr. Gabor Mate or Mate, however you want to say it. I never know how to say it.
I do. Yeah.
He's. Well, I've watched interviews with him. I watched the recent video they did on trauma, and they publicized. I've read the book In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts, which is a classic that he's written mm-hmm. about dealing with trauma and addictions. And I don't think I would have success in getting him to our little podcast, but it would be a thrill. It would be a thrill, but.
It would be.
Is there a specific
yeah.
point that you wanted to bring up about his work or his theories about dealing with work, with trauma?
Oh, my. Well, a few things I remember, and I want to actually go back. I've just discovered him this last week, and I've listened to and watched some of his interviews. And one of the things I like very much is how he explains the trigger. And it was, you know, I've known about the trigger forever, and yet he really talked about it in a way that gave me a very, a slightly different understanding. So that was cool. Another thing that, I like is how he goes, you know, he believes that almost every illness that we have comes from early childhood traumas. And he goes into explaining that traumas might not have seemed like traumas to anybody else, but how that can be a trauma to the child and be carried forward. So I thought the way he went into depth with that was really important to me. The fact all about addiction, and I went, oh, my God, I'm addicted to more than I thought I was. But he makes that very clear case as well about addiction. So, I was wondering if perhaps you could try to get him, and also hoping that that would be so. I know that he's a pretty busy guy, I guess.
Well, and he's, you know, he's well sought after by lots and lots of people, and, you know, Peter Levine and the people that do the brain spotting, and you know, he's a high level, well sought after.
Yeah,
I think he's currently retired from doing the medical work that he did for so long in his kind of a push to help, but he was driven to this compulsive life where he was seen as the physician and the expert and paid some good money, but he was basically using it to stay away from his family of origin, and his wife and kids, and he knows a lot about the process because he would help his patients with it, but he would also see it in himself, and.
Right.
You know, I can recommend the book In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts as it's a kind of a long book, but there's a lot of good stuff in there. And he is honest about his own story. There are some wonderful interviews we've shared with the Tuesday and Thursday support groups where he's been, you know, he's done interviews with Adyashanti and some other big names where they share the spiritual and the practical approach to healing and to undoing, mm-hmm. unraveling the roots of our obsessive compulsive and addictive problems.
Right. Well, I'm glad to check out that book. I was wondering which of his books would be the best to start with. And that one did seem to appeal to me. So it's nice to have your recommendation on that. Okay, well, I just thought I would check with you. See if it's worth making the overture to him.
Well, there's there are some relatively larger names that we're starting to get some access to for the podcast, but he's not relatively big. He's just big, and he's been on the circuit for a long time, and he's got the ear of people like Oprah and the other, Peter Levine and Bessel van der Kolk and all these people that are at the top of the game in terms of being national and international experts and sought-after speakers for conferences and keynotes and things like that. Gabor's right up there.
Okay, well, see, I didn't know that, having just discovered him a week ago. I don't know how that happened, but it's okay. Coming at the right time. Everything's in perfect timing. So, okay, well, good.
I appreciate the recommendation, and I can return the recommendation to say there are lots of good YouTube videos out there of his that are free. There is a recently, I forget the specific name of it, but there was a movie they promoted through the something non-dualism, spirituality and non-dualism, S-A-N-D. And they had this trauma movie that they produced, and he was one of the primary people in it.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, good. I will check out some more YouTube.
I think it's called The Wisdom of Trauma. Science and Non-Duality is the scienceandnonduality.com, and the movie is The Wisdom of Trauma, and the primary speaker in it off and on is Gabor.
Cool. So one more time, how do you suspect his last name would be?
Mate. I don't think it matters. It's a French thing, and we're not going to say it right.
Oh, I thought he was Yugoslavian.
Pardon me?
I thought he was from Yugoslavia.
Yeah, he probably is. But when you start making the umlauts over the ends of the letters in the foreign language stuff, us Westerners just go, it's all French to me.
I got it. What's a very pretty name. Okay, well, carry on. I shall continue listening. And say blessings, Dr. Kim.
All right. Blessings to you. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
I have the list of interviewees includes Mira Rubin coming up on Wednesday, Dr. Lewis for I think he's a sound therapy expert, sound and brain waves. Brad Yates for EFT tapping is coming up next week. Dr. Nelson, who wrote the book Emotion Codes, is also next week. So if you have, people you'd like to have us reach out to interview or explore their work or read the book and review it, give us a call, 563-999-3581, or send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. October 6th, I have the interview coming up with Richard Moss, who, as we were talking about, had the book on the mandala of being, and the other one about inside-out healing, transforming your life through presence. So 563-999-3581. What's your comment or question to help us close out the last 9 minutes of the show? Awakening to the Power of Present Moment Awareness. And in his book, Richard Moss talks about an actual process. It isn't as specific as the reality management worksheet, but he tries to help us as adults relearn what we used to do as kids. How do you stay awake and aware and present moment, mind, body, spirit? How do you bring the power of that present moment awareness into your life more often? And that's what his two books are about, Inside Out Healing and Mandala of Being. So I'm trying to think about where we were right before Magda called, and we were talking about so many of these various approaches that I get the most benefit of when I look at how similar they are. What is similar from one to the other? What's similar from coherence therapy and between coherence therapy and the reality management worksheet? The essence of it for similarity is all we're doing is observing. We're not getting in there to change anything. We're looking at what it is we're already doing that's creating what we're experiencing. And once we see it clearly, then we don't need to do anything other than observe it and be with it. And then the innate wisdom, the internal healer, does the work. You know, in each and every worksheet process, I first three steps, I map out what my mind is doing with the thought energy focused on a certain pattern of thought that's generating a certain emotion, and how my mind is trying to convince me that that's all happening because of some outside force. And as I map that out and then I'm willing to cancel it, then I watch what happens. I just ask to be shown whatever is needed for me to see, to heal and move forward, to integrate, to understand at a deeper level, that it's all an inside job. And once I see that, there's nothing to be done. It is, or what is to be done just comes to me naturally. I don't need to ask an outside expert. I don't need to find a guru, because my own internal access to that higher wisdom is activated when I get enough of the garbage out of the way, when I'm willing to cancel that conditioned response to try and believe that I know that I'm right and other people are wrong. And when I cancel that and I get enough of the false beliefs out of the way, my ability to see my true nature and access to that higher inner wisdom is readily available. It's just right there at the surface. And the transformations that happen in perception and the transformations that happen in emotional healing go beyond words each new heartbeat. And it's not accomplished by getting another doctorate or several master's degrees or figuring it out, as Michael Rice would say, is the primary pseudo-solution of the non-being mind. I'm just going to figure this out. I'm going to figure out what I need to do to please my power person. I'm going to figure out what I need to do to make this person love me. I'm going to figure out what I need to do to get happy. And that's a trap. Because the essence of the contentment or the joy or the happiness that everyone says they want is their birthright. And it's already there. It's just not something they can see right now because there's too much false belief and rigid thinking in the way, covering it up. So if we use a tool like the Reality Management Worksheet and we map out that negative belief system and that conscious logical struggle to be right, and then we cancel it, then we get access to our true nature, which is always there, you know, from inception. Our true nature, the essence of the creative energy expressing in form, has always been there and will always be there. It's never been chipped, dented, rusted, faded, broken in any way. And when we're not directly aware of it, it's because we've got garbage blocking our view, not because our essence is in any way defective, but because we're focused on something that isn't our true nature. And so every one of these therapies that really work, spiritual teachings that really grab the essence of what works, every one of them is this, it's the same in this way. It has us just observing. Just observe. Just question and observe. Just ask to be shown. Get the conscious logical mind aside and train yourself to be more aware. What is the feedback signal system that's coming from your body? What is the essence when you're not running from it? Asking to be shown and being willing to sit with whatever comes up, two key factors in just about everything I've ever seen that truly works. And oddly enough, sometimes it's the thing that people want to say is so unique about their work. And yet, I believe if you look at it, as I've looked at it, I continue to look at it and just to observe directly, almost every system I've ever encountered that truly works does the same thing. Observe and be with what's there. And the more I'm there truly with my essence and what's really there, the more is revealed and the more I get to see and have direct, you know, in vivo experience of my true nature. And that's all that's needed. So I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are the energy of love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you. I'll have to go back and re-listen to capture all of the names of the interviews that are coming up, but I'll get those in the notes for today.
All right. Have a wonderful show.
Awesome.
Blessings.
Thank you. Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Monday, September the 20th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, I will. I had gotten a hold of the girl that wrote the song that is our intro and outro for the radio show. It's called Evolve, and Mary Redonte is the writer. And one of her links showed up as broken on the website, and so I had contacted her, and she gave me new contact information, and she actually told me that after a long time, that she has now got that song back in her repertoire and that she is really glad that we're still using it for our radio show. And so she's doing really well. She's kind of changed her name after she created her last album, and it's now Maria Sophia. And but I'll be putting that link out there on the website. So if you've tried to get any of that information and those links weren't working, I'll get those back up and running. And if you run across any other links that seem to be not working properly or you want something else to show up in a different place, drop me a line. My email is Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and let me know. And I'll be glad to see what I can do. So Michael is dialing in. Questions out there today? Somebody come across anything that you need support with, something you disagree with, or whatever? Just press 1 and let us hear from you. And Michael's not with us yet. Let me go in and see if he's having technical difficulty. So I'll invite you to go to the website, whyagain.org, and click on the Start Here in the upper left corner, or you can scroll down. There's a bullseye in the middle of the page. Both of those will take you to the same place, and you'll find all of the worksheets. You'll find special radio shows that we've kind of pulled out. I mean, they're all special, but sometimes we'll have one show where we actually walk someone through a worksheet during the whole show. And so we kind of pull those out as special MP3s, so you can access those on that as well. Michael's book is out there. Lots and lots of information, audios, videos. And like I said, if you run across a page that doesn't seem to be linking right, please let me know. We switched over not too long ago to a different, we went to WordPress instead of Joomla. And so things operate a little bit differently, but we're working on getting everything squared away. But if you do run across something that doesn't seem to be working quite right, please drop me a line. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here, and we get to engage in this conversation one more time. And it is an exciting and, I guess the word is, enlightening conversation when you start tapping into this first century Aramaic thinking that is so, so dramatically different than what our culture corrupted by hostility or fear has taught us. And so we're here to open the space for people to at least investigate and look at another way of thinking if they've come up in a culture of hostility or fear, which seems to be a lot of what runs on the American scene. If you watch just about any newscast or any conversation going on in the culture, the level of hostility, the level of fear, and it doesn't matter whether you're in the religious realm, the fear and intimidation and terrorism that's used there, the political realm is turning more and more to terrorism. You know, we used to think it was the international terrorists that were the problem, but now we're seeing that really the terrorism that has started out, you know, if you look at words, one of the key things to look at in the Aramaic language is the power of words. In fact, Yeshua says the power of life and death is in your words, and that all behavior starts with words. And you look at the terrorism that's being used in words. You look at the minds that, you know, every word they say to anyone who isn't totally on their side is that of an attempt to intimidate and terrorize. And that terrorism, ultimately, if it starts in language, becomes behavior. And we look at the family systems that live in that realm and live in such traumatic states that physiology, there's actually a name in medicine for living in a state where you've been terrorized most of your life. It's called the sympathetic dominant state. And one of the objectives of this work is to shift out of that sympathetic dominant state where most of the creative functions of the body are shut down. Literally, nerve and blood supply is shut off to those parts of the structure because they're irrelevant if somebody's in short-term threat. You know, if one's in survival mode, you don't need to eliminate, you don't need to repair cells, you don't need to heal cells, you don't need to digest food, you don't need to eliminate waste. You know, those things just aren't necessary. if somebody's in that terror state where life is threatened and the shutdown of all of the creative, positive, uplifting functions that cause humans to thrive are shut down in those states. And you just take a look around, and sadly, most of the culture, that's where they're not living. You know, go back even, 2,000 years ago, wasn't any different. And Yeshua was talking about, at one point someone talks about burying his father. He says, let the dead bury the dead. The living death, the zombies who live in hostility or fear were so prevalent 2,000 years ago. That's what he said. And it's not much different today. And that's basically the survival mode. Physiological functions that cause or support survival function well in that mode. But if that's the mode we live in, then all higher functions are pretty much shut down, are pretty much cut off. And what we want to do is restore the innervation to those higher functions, to the ability to thrive as humans are designed to thrive. And that means that we're going to come forward out of a space of thriving rather than surviving, out of a space of caring rather than killing. And I was just reading an article this morning, and you might remember that Eisenhower, when he left office, said we needed to watch out for the military-industrial complex. And I didn't know this until recently. I mean, I know all the wars going on and all the military equipment being shipped all over the world daily. But what that business did, what in survival in that world did, was they literally built factories in every one of the congressional districts in the United States. Every congressional district has some form of attack factory. They call them defense contractors. No, they're not defense contractors. Let's stop lying. Let's tell the truth. It's about attack. And in order to get politicians to support that attack industry, which is just so prolific throughout the world today, as though it was necessary, they built factories in every one of the 435 congressional districts. So what does that mean? People are clamoring for better pay and jobs, and politicians are giving away the farm in order to get that factory to hire more people, spend more money in their district, and create more funding for them, put more money to line their pockets. It's based in gross, manipulative insanity. And that's what people in survival do. It's not a blame game. It's just that's what people in survival do. When we open the innervation to the higher centers, both in the brain and in the body, digestive system, look at the people in our culture with digestive problems. Digestive system doesn't have to work if the only thing you're caring about, the only thing your physiology is concerned about is short-term survival. Hey, shut off that digestion. You got, everybody produces cancer cells every day. Your body's producing cancer cells because of the toxicity and the fear and the rage that's in it. You don't need to fight those cancer cells. Don't need to put any energy in that. If imminent death is what the cell is getting as a message, then what it needs to do is survive. And, when you recognize that what we have in this so-called human body is a collection of trillions of individuals called cells, that take their, each cell doesn't have a set of so-called eyes that can feed it information about the world. So there's a central supply house that gives every cell its messages. And if that supply house was raised, born, bred, genetically fed by terror and trauma, hate and fear, war and guilt and attack, beatings, sexual abuse. And the sexual abuse in this country is absolutely rampant. Rampant. And it's time for us to change the game. And those, all of those things I'm speaking about, from the war machine to the sexual abuse, are all based in short-term survival mentality, cells getting the message that there is an imminent threat. We don't need higher functions. We need to keep living in the gutter. So this work is about elevating ourselves from that. You know, when the stress is up and the chips are down, do you feel like you have to terrorize somebody in order to survive? If you do, then notice that you're playing power person dynamics out of someone who terrorized you. And stop lying to yourself. Stop telling yourself a story. You know, perception is a, you know, the Course in Miracles talks about perception is a skill made up by us to take the place of what the Creator gave you. Creator gave you a tissue structure designed to thrive. And if you're not thriving, perception gives you a series of lies that tells you about how somebody else is the problem in your life and is the reason why you're in survival mode, and what's going on inside of you is all somebody else's fault. And that's a whole construct of the mind. And it's fake and it's false. And it's built on generations and generations and generations of terrorism and trauma for people who are doing that. And it doesn't matter how much money you've got. Some of those vicious mouths I've ever seen are the mouths with millions of dollars in their bank accounts. Supposedly successful people. Excuse me. A mind that has vile words based in hostility or fear for everyone, including themselves, and especially themselves, is not a successful person. There's no success there. But perception is a construct of the mind made up to give us an excuse as to why we're in pain, and that excuse is, and just listen to your conversations when you're upset and disturbance. Is your conversation about clarifying your own internal process and what you're doing to yourself? Or is your process, is your language about what they did to you? It's time for us to wake up. It's time for us to understand that we are human beings, and human beings are literally, as Dr. Tim says each day he closes his show, it's what we are. Of Course in Miracles talks about you need not seek for love. Just seek, find, and release the barriers you built within yourself against it. And one of the keys in that whole process is simply to be aware of what you're doing with your breath. And if in any conversation you're shutting down your breath, then you're shutting down your vitality, you're shutting down your ability to thrive, and you're entering that survival mode. The cellular structure of the body, the individuals that have no eyes to bring them information so they can build a construct about what's going on in the world, receives their information from this either love-based self or fear-based self, hostility-based self. And if we find ourselves in one mode and we'd rather be in the other, then the urgent work is that of continuously observing, you know, becoming the thinker apart from the thought, the feeler apart from the feeling, the actor apart from the actions, observing what your mind is doing. And when it turns to hostility or fear, stop telling stories about other people. Start telling yourself the truth about yourself. every thought that reflects hostility or fear is a literal death thought in the human structure. It is the stuff death is made of. Stop it. It's time for us to simply stop it. And then acquire the skill of removing the thought disorders that run the survival-based mind. And thought disorders are energetically patterned thoughts based in hostility or fear that we carry around either from our genes and our generations, from our culture, from our own lives, those things that are based in survival. You can't keep up a survival conversation and live for very long. You can survive, but the survival mode for physiology is something that's meant to be active short term. You know, you're out there in the jungle, there's a lion. Man, you want survival mode to kick in. You want the strongest muscles. You want the best ability to breathe and run like hell or turn and fight and survive. But that survival mode is the mode of death if it carries on long term. It is literally death mode. It is self-destruct mode if it carries beyond, well, you know, 3 minutes ago there was a tiger coming into my space. 3 minutes later I've either been eaten or I've survived. Now I need to be able to let that energy go and go back to thrive mode, or survival mode will literally physically kill me. It's not meant to be a long-term strategy for life. So the realization of who we are as love, and when I say realization, I mean to make real, to bring into full awareness the truth, the reality that you are a being literally made of conscious, active, present love. And that needs to be the prime mode of awareness. Not a perceptual system and a perceptual construct that's always looking out for what's wrong and who's going to attack and how you're going to be attacked and how you're going to escape and how you're going to survive. And breathing is one of the big keys. And so I'm going to jump into the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Well, I'm not going to literally jump into it, but I'm going to open it and read a little bit. We've started the chapter on clarifying love, this conversation with this character, Richard. And Richard's not very happy at looking at the truth of what he's been doing to himself. The key thought that we finished with on Friday was a mind without love is stupid, quote unquote. In other words, it's fueled via survival and it's going to destroy itself. And I just finished saying to Richard, you know, he's expressed some upset, some hostility about his reality structure generating perceptual constructs that are strictly internal to him that he can't blame on someone else. And I just, you know, as we finished Friday, I read the paragraph that says, there's an old saying that the truth will set you free, but first it's going to bring up all of your anger and rage. And I'm trying to, you know, Richard's energy's gotten a little heavy at this point, so I'm trying to lighten the energy a little, so... Richard, the word love in this culture is so distorted that its true meaning has been almost lost. Much of the entertainment industry would have us believe that love is sexual athletics and satiation. Others would have us believe that it is self-denial and sacrifice. Still others would have us think we show love by receiving their abuses graciously. Think about it. Who has something to gain by our believing these bizarre definitions of love? I can almost hear Richard's brain churning in search of an answer. I'm not sure what you mean. If I believe love is sexual athletics as portrayed on the screen, I suggested, might I pay for more sick movies and demand more intense and bizarre sexuality in order to be satiated? Might I think what is played out in the movies is normal and try to live up to the reality I've come to believe is true? Might I find myself wanting to participate in the outrageous habits for which much of the entertainment industry is famous? We need to recognize, Richard, that fulfilling outrageous fantasies will never satisfy us. It will only lead to even more bizarre behaviors. And of course, people will try to make those behaviors look normal. That's what we do, and that's okay. Don't hold me accountable if I'm doing something that's insane and destructive. I think that it's fun, and therefore I'm going to do it. So the bizarre behaviors build. Until we recognize that, we'll continue to repeat those behaviors, wondering, is that all there is? What's wrong with me? If we hold painful realities in our minds, it does not matter how many of the quote-unquote rewards based on incorrect understanding of life we receive, happiness will still elude us. No matter how many possessions, how much money, sex, power, or fame we achieve, these things can never satisfy us because they are empty and false. Satiation masquerades as satisfaction, but when it is experienced, it cannot deliver its tempting guarantee. And we come to a key thought. Possessions cannot take the place of happiness or relationship. I told Richard the story of the old man on his deathbed who was asked the secret to happiness. The old man is said to have replied, "For years and years I searched for what people told me would make me happy, and then I just decided to serve life and be happy without it." Happiness is a state of mind, a choice we make, not a result of possessing things or being in control of people or circumstances. People often use the sensation that comes from possessing things as a substitute for happiness, for relationship, and as a way of not dealing with their internalized pain. So that's where we're heading with waking up to the truth of who we are as actual human beings, who we are as the actual active presence of love that we're designed to be, and how to function that way. And we're delighted that you're here to be part of the conversation. Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody on the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
Nope, it is all quiet, except I just knocked something over. But it's quiet on the switchboard and no questions in the chat room. So somebody press 1. Which direction would you like the conversation to go?
How can we support you? What's on your mind? If you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, our calling number is 563-999-3581. I just turned the page from where I completed that reading. I'm going to add one more key thought that we have here. It comes from Albert Schweitzer. He says, "The one thing I know, the only ones among you who will be really happy are those who have thought and found how to serve." Thank you, Albert. That's a pretty powerful thought. So how can we serve you? What's on your mind? 563-999-3581 if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you. And if you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. When you push 1, a little hand will go up in the control panel, Jeannie will introduce you by your area code, and we'll be having a conversation. Let's have a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind? Now, I can't imagine after what I've just said that there aren't at least a dozen questions, 100 questions. I can't imagine that if I were in your hometown and I just finished doing that presentation in your local library or church or community center, prison, whatever, and I walk down off the stage, that somebody, that each of you that are listening wouldn't be coming over saying, Michael, well, what about, or I think, or here's what that brought up for me, or here's what I need support with. How can we support you? What's on your mind? This show is designed to be a dialogue, not a monologue. So, come on. Somebody push the button. I know your finger's just right there, ready to go. And you may have a thought that, oh, my voice would be shaky. I'll be on the radio. Well, so what? Can you let that be okay and let your voice be shaky and ask your question anyway? Or maybe, you know, it's, well, you know, I don't know enough about this to ask the right questions. Believe me, your question, if you ask it, is the right question. And so, what's your question? How can we help you? You know, there's a story about Albert Einstein. And they apparently said to him, or asked him the question, if you were to be given a problem you had to solve within an hour or you would be dead, what would you do? And he is said to have replied, I would take 55 minutes to figure out the right question to ask, and then I would solve the problem in the last 5 minutes. Questions are really the key. Questions are key because literally inside of us is every answer to every question. There is a power in us that will feed us every answer we need. But the process operates through resonance. And you have to get the question right in order for the answer to be resonated out of that power that resides within you that has all of the answers. Ultimately, that's what we're here to connect you with, to get, you know, who was it, to get your bloated nothingness out of the way. That survival fear-based self, get rid of it, let it loose. And then when you ask a question, there is a power in you that literally has access to all knowledge in the universe, known and unknown. And when the frequency, when the vibration, you know, the same way as when I say, don't think about the color of your car, through resonance, what moves in you is the color of your car. In exactly the same way, when you ask the right question, then through resonance, you're offered the answer if you can get your bloated nothingness out of the way. And so that's one of the practices that we each engage in. And it's forgiveness that allows that to happen. It's forgiveness that releases the non-being mind. It's the ability to construct stories out of everything in the mind and the genes that have been dissociated from stories that make it look like everything that's going on in my life is somebody else's fault. You know, you'll notice if you've been through a particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the only one that was there every time. Now notice that your mind can make up a story about all 42 of those people. But you're the one that was there. And your mind is lying to you. You know, the way that the non-being mind, you know, our last chapter was the body has a mind of its own. The way the body's mind has been structured over generations and generations and generations of blame and denial is to be a real crackerjack at being able to hallucinate a story, a literal perceptual construct that literally turns into the world that we see, that very skillfully will show us how everything we're experiencing is that person's fault. The question becomes, if 30 years ago it was that person's fault, and 29 years ago it was that person's fault, and 28 years ago it was that person, 27, 6, 5, 4, 3, and the last year it was still somebody else. How come there's only one person who is there every time it happened? Sooner or later, we got to stop lying to ourselves. Sooner or later, we have to own that we're the ones who are setting up what happens in our lives. Yes, other people come in as actors, you know, supporting cast to assist us in our creative process, but, you know, probably the greatest atrocity done to us as human beings down through the ages and that we've bought into is we've had hidden from ourselves the fact that we are by nature creators. We are each creative beings, and everybody loves that idea when the creation's rocking on. And everybody hates that idea when the creation resonates pain. But the gift of that pain, you know, pain has a really profound purpose. It makes your ears grow. It gives you the opportunity to start looking and questioning. It gets your attention. And you will only experience pain in places where you have denial and dissociation. No, Michael, I have a physical disease. Well, that's what I said, where you have denial and dissociation. Because ultimately, that's where your physical, so-called physical diseases are going to show up. And the reason for that is that there is no physical. Oh, wait a minute, Michael. You know, everybody looks around and they see the physical. Yeah, you can brainwash anybody. You can hypnotize people and see anything. Let's listen to Einstein. On such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. This is a direct quote from Einstein. There is no matter. What exists is energy. And our brain, when we don't want the truth that the energy offers us, has been trained to make up a construct called perception. I think they look out at the world through their eyes. And that's such a ludicrous thought. But everybody believes, oh, I looked out there and saw it. No, you didn't. Light energy came in through your eye. You can't see out through your eye. It's an antenna. You can't anymore see out through your eye than you could look up the wires in the back of a TV set and look out through the antenna into the world. It's just a silly joke. And yet virtually everybody believes they open their eyes and they see what's going on out there. That's a fraud. Light energy brings information into your eyes, and based on what that information that comes in through that antenna, based on what it resonates in you, your brain generates that construct called perception, called the world that you see, the world of matter. It is a construct of the mind. The actuality is that of energetic patterns, stuff. And as long as you live in denial, and our definition in this work of denial is when I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, I'm in denial. And I'm saying to my mind, mind, you are not allowed to show me accurately what's happening here. You must show me a construct that says that Bill is the cause of my pain or my trauma. So sure enough, my mind will generate a construct. And it'll be Bill, and Bill will be the problem. And Bill, sitting there in denial, will look at me and say, ah, don't you dare, mind, show me that I am the problem in my life. You show me that that guy over there, Michael, is the source of my problems. And sure enough, Bill's mind will generate a construct and he'll swear that Michael's the problem in his life. Have you ever sworn that somebody else was the reason you were in pain? Is there anybody that you hold the belief that if they changed, your life would get better? if they change and you don't change the part of you that resonates with that, that they're about, then you'll just go out and hook somebody else into doing it with you. You find someone else to play it out. Because when we're in denial, when we think or speak as though something outside of us is the cause of what's moving inside of us, we literally must cut off access to the information in us that represents the truth. And that's called dissociation. When I'm cut off from the truth, then I use language and perception to construct a world that twists the truth backward and literally shows me that Bill's the problem in my life, as Bill does the same thing with me. It's not until either I or Bill say, I've been through this 87 different times with 42 different people. I'm starting to suspect that maybe the problem isn't Bill. Maybe the reason I'm in pain is because of something I'm holding on to, something I'm not willing to be responsible for. It takes a huge piece of learning to get through that one. So we have this literal whole world, we'd say lowercase w world, called perception that obeys language. Show me that Bill's the problem. And my mind will organize data, and I will literally see. My mind will literally paint a painting that appears in my brain as though it's coming through my eyes, and it's coming from my brain. A painting, a structure, a picture of how Bill is the problem. And the mind is so been trained so deeply and so skillfully in that lie that most people go to their graves never suspecting that there was anything they could have done about it. There is. There's a lot you can do about it. You can change your mind. Forgiveness is the key to that. And forgiveness isn't letting somebody else off the hook because your mind is in a certain place. Forgiveness is reaching into the deeper layers of your own mind and removing what never belonged, literally telling yourself the truth about yourself. You know, when people talk about telling the truth, usually what they mean is, yeah, let me prove to you how Bill is the problem. Now, here's the truth. Rather than, yeah, I've been through this rage 87 different times with 42 different people, and here I'm in that rage again. And I choose to believe the picture of my mind showing me that you're the reason that I'm experiencing that. But when I tell myself the truth, the truth's going to look more like, oh, man, I've done this rage so many times. When did it start? What's at the root of this? Ah, here's why I use the forgiveness process. What's the goal I have for Bill? Well, I want Bill to treat me respectfully. What's forgiveness going to look like in that situation? In the Aramaic language, the word forgive is shebag. It means to cancel. And the goals that we use to drive our perceptual world are the cause, combined with that data in the mind, the cause of us seeing the world, structuring the world the way that we do. And the thing that needs to be canceled is the goal for the external object of attention. And sometimes it's a goal you hold for yourself. And when you do that, and because the goal has been withdrawn, perception collapses. It collapses in on its own footprint. It collapses in on itself. And that gives you access to the underlying core true issue. And that's the power, the beauty of the first century Aramaic forgiveness process, the exact opposite of what the Greeks taught us.
We have a hand up.
Miss Jeannie, I heard you in the background. Have you got a hand up?
Yes. It's 808 Roma. You're on the air.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome. Miss Roma, we can't hear you.
Well, she just dropped off, so maybe she was having trouble hearing us or something. So I'm sure she'll call
back. Phone challenges, perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see if she does. In the meantime, any thoughts for you, sweetie?
No. Okay, she's 808. You are on the air. Is this Roma?
Yeah.
Let's try again. There you are.
Disconnected.
I hear your laugh.
Yeah.
Technology.
Oh, boy. Wow.
So what's on your mind today, young lady?
Well, it's interesting because we had a Divine Science Ministers Association board meeting yesterday. And, of course, we've got the conference coming up in October, and you
right.
are one of our guest presenters, so we're looking forward to
yes.
that. And we were discussing the registration, and so far it's rather minimal. And I found myself saying, well, you know, I think COVID has impacted people to be less active and outgoing and, you know, participatory. And as I was listening to your conversation in the last, you know, 15, 20 minutes, I realized
mm-hmm.
that I was projecting. I was projecting in our organization and, you know, and also I think that, you know, my observation in being on the line in these, you know, really in the gift of these telephone calls that you make available for all of us all over planet Earth every morning, Monday through Friday, you know, it looks to me, I would have said that the lack of call-ins on this program, on Why Is This Happening to Me Again, is for the same reason, that people are hanging out inside their houses trying to make sure they don't catch COVID, you know. And so I saw the pattern because I saw the pattern in my own thinking. And, yeah, it's just so wonderful to have a tool to erase that, literally erase it, and access the clear paper that was underneath that scribbling in consciousness so that we can be in the light, you know. Last week I noticed that my energy was sort of down, and I did a worksheet, and you know, right when I got there to the bottom of the worksheet, to you know, that there's that one paragraph when, let's see, where is it exactly? There's one place on the worksheet that just always does it for me, but it's not coming to mind right now. It's toward the end. It's in the last two. It's in the last one third of the sheet. And I don't have one in front of me right now, so my memory is different than it used to be. So really, that's why I laugh. I guess I laugh a lot because what else is there to do? Yeah, because the vitality is still in me. That's why I laugh a lot. I'm alive. I have the opportunity to co-create my reality with God in every single moment. And I have a worksheet right there in a three-ring binder right by my bed. So I'm so grateful for the tool, Michael. I really am.
Well, it's a delight and honor to be sharing it with you. And Glad you're sharing with the world. I look forward to speaking to the conference and, you know, sowing this seed of forgiveness on another level on a global scale.
Right. So it's a beautiful day here. Sunlight, bright, beautiful, sunny. I was on the computer yesterday and I noticed our weather was 80 degrees yesterday morning. And I thought, wow, it's really warm. But it's usually, it never gets warm, it never gets hot, and it never gets cold here, so we're very lucky here.
That's nice. We're at the point where we're getting down into some days in here in Bristol, Virginia, into the 60s during the day, and I see one night next week they're predicting 43, so our garden has slowed down its production. We're actually creating some new garden spaces, and that's been fun, but I was hoping we get and maybe we'll still get it. I'm hoping for an Indian summer to come along.
Yeah. I enjoyed seeing the pictures of your garden on the Facebook page. That's very beautiful.
Cool.
How you've surrounded it with those beautiful white stones. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool, and the buckwheat is now up to about 7 inches tall. And getting ready to fold it into the soil, I think, and put another crop in before winter comes. So that actually that's a whole new garden space, that particular one.
Yeah, and what was your purpose and reason of planting buckwheat?
Well, they call it green manure. Basically, Jeannie and I went out about 2 weeks ago, and we rented a U-Haul trailer. Large one, and we got 2 tons of compost from the local composting facility.
Mm-hmm.
4,000 pounds that we shoveled into those gardens.
Wow.
And, you know, they're composted leaves and grasses. So we put that in with a soil mixture, and then they call buckwheat or similar things or several different relatively fast-growing crops, and we just put these buckwheat seeds in about, maybe 8 days ago, and they're already now six, seven inches tall. And what they do is they release the nutrients in the soil, so they're called green manure, and then plowing them back into the soil, it puts that nutrient that decays, feeds worms, feeds microbes, just builds the health of the soil.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's an interesting video out there called We Must Grow. And they're saying that with, you know, commercial agriculture that basically, you know, the soil grows food out of the organisms that are in the soil. If you spray, as commercial farming does, 10 gallons of glyphosate, cancer-causing glyphosate, on every acre of land before you grow, virtually everything, including those microorganisms that are designed to grow, are dead. They're killed. And then put some chemicals in, and they call the chemical result food. It really isn't food at all. You start looking at, you know, the degenerative diseases that are rampant in children and adults, just all of them. I mean, they were virtually unknown 100 years ago because we had actual food and soil. So we're working on rebuilding what we can of the soil we've got access to into real, honest-to-God soil that has micronutrients and microorganisms that are what create food. Our first little garden when we first moved here 3 years ago was a space about 15 feet by 3 feet. We had, I think, 4 or 5 tomato plants in it. And the tomato plants grew up to about 4 feet tall, and that was their limit with the fact that the soil had just been, you know, what soil has become in America. And we started building it, composting and building it. And this year, our shortest tomato tree is about 8 feet tall, and the tallest one's about 9.5 feet tall. Yes, we're getting tomatoes that are over a pound each that are just, I mean, I haven't eaten tomatoes like this in 25 years. So we're building the soil up. So we just added 2 additional gardens to the spaces we're going here and building soil. So
that's kind of an interesting scientific experiment.
Yeah. It is.
I like to think of life as a scientific experiment. I just do.
Well, it is. It's an opportunity for sure.
Well, and you know, one of the primary things that I hold in my my consciousness as a vision or a goal is, to extend my human lifespan. I'm really curious. to see what's possible. My body is so healthy. I'm 78 years old, and my body is amazingly healthy. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. Yeah, no pain anywhere. So nice.
Awesome. Well, you've been doing your work.
I had a strawberry. What? Yeah. Say it again.
That's the natural state. That's where we're supposed to be.
Yeah. Right. Right. But it wasn't always that way. When I was newborn, there was a strawberry birthmark on my spine at the waist, and the doctor cut it off. So, he had a knife there in case I was a boy. And so he just took it off. And it was a spot of trauma for my spine, for about 75 years, actually. But I've done a lot of work on the floor. I'll lie down flat on my back on the floor and really just kind of move my body in whatever direction it wants to move. And essentially, I'm stretching the muscles. And the thing is that area in my back was really rigid for all those years. But I've gotten to a point now where that damage has been completely, it's disappeared. It's just not there anymore.
Sweet.
Yeah, so, that's my scientist, that as a divine science minister, that's my my personal
that's real science. Yep.
Frontier to see what's possible here with the gift of human life that God has given all of us. So precious and such a, I guess I'm just going to say it, we haven't even begun to see what's possible on this planet yet, you know? I mean, I don't know, I just feel that. I feel that in my soul. I guess I'm talking out of my soul now, that my soul feels very expectant and hopeful and
right
and joyful about the possibilities that are in front of every single one of us if and when we eliminate all the programming from our early childhood and from those past lives. Once you get rid of that stuff, a whole new frontier of possibility shows up, and
yep.
It's exciting and it's delightful. And So that's kind of where I'm at, and I have you and Jeannie to thank for it, and my willingness to face my pain and my rage and my fear every time it's come up, and take that worksheet out and get to the end of the paper where I'm feeling loved again.
Cool.
Yeah. So thank you.
That's the idea. Thanks for being on the team.
That's the tone of voice I was waiting to hear. Oh, that's
yay.
Great. That's great.
Let's go
okay,
for it.
Very good. Okay.
All right.
Well, aloha to everyone on the call. I'm sending you lots of beautiful Hawaiian sunshiny energy. Love you all. Bye-bye.
All right. Blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Miss Jeannie, right. We're down to about 6 minutes or so.
Well, with the Avatar, you've got
movie.
About 4.5.
Oh, okay. Well, a good movie, if you're interested in that conversation about the soil, is called Kiss the Ground, as in, bend down and kiss the ground. And it is hosted by Woody Harrelson. And he's talking about, the healing of the soil on the earth. And one of the things that the experts are telling us that the way commercial farming is done, that we've literally killed the soil almost globally, and that we perhaps have about, 60 years left of the ability to grow food before the soils of of the earth are so depleted, there will be no food produced by the earth. And in this documentary, Woody Harrelson talks about and brings forward the whole idea of what it takes to heal our soil. And of course, as you heal your soil, the food that grows from it is going to support your healing process. And so it's an important part of it. You know, for 30 plus years, we've been doing intensives at Heartland and other places around the globe. And whenever we do an intensive, we do a total fresh and raw food program. Literally, nothing is cooked. It's all just food. No chemicals, no junk, no fillers, no artificial colors, no artificial flavors, nothing to destroy the palate. And when you restore the palate automatically rejects the garbage that's being sold in the grocery stores and in the restaurants as food. You know, basically you go into virtually any restaurant and you get a variety. You know, you go to an Italian restaurant or a Mexican restaurant or a Greek restaurant or, you know, an Ethiopian restaurant. And by and large, what you get to buy is sugar, salt, and fat. And with a few condiments, it's called Mexican food or Spanish food or, you know, whatever, you know, you want to call it. But it's not food. We've been tricked. So kiss the ground. Powerful. Powerful food.
We have a hand up.
Great. Let's say hello.
904. I think this is Dusty.
Well, aloha, Michael and Jeannie.
Aloha, young man. Como estas?
Thank you. Well, you said something a while ago, and it reminded me of something so important. You, in the process of talking about old wounds, et cetera, you mentioned that we don't look out our eyes. The reflected light basically comes in. It's the receiving intent.
Exactly.
And while I try to use some of that, some of my eyes to project intention, for the most part, darn you, now I've got to kind of spend the next 3-4 days reconfiguring how I see.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that's part of it.
That's powerful. Just to get that.
Yeah, the presumptions that our whole culture have. You know, yeah, I'd look out. I have this pair of windows I look out of. It's just, it's a silly fraud when you really think about it. I mean, it's so silly. And when you start doing the research on the neurology, you know, no light gets into the brain. No sound gets into the brain. The brain makes up its best guess about what that light and what those sounds mean. And it creates this construct called perception. And all perception, by definition, because it is from information stored in the structure, it's obviously from the past. And anything from the past can't be true about the present. It might be accurate, but it can't be true. And once you start realizing that and start deleting that, a whole different world opens.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it seems that for many of us, we look out our eyes and we make all assumptions based on God knows what. And it's sort of like expecting our ears to talk. You know what I mean? It's just a receptor, and primarily, yeah. And I'm just trying to really let that sink in, you know?
Yep.
Again. And again. And
I hear
again,
you.
And again. And again. Yeah. And
yep.
Well, thank you for
it's,
that.
It's
that
such a
nice.
Massive shift of mind. And we're going to, the show's going to cut us off in a minute, but go ahead with your thoughts.
No, that was just, I like what you said. It was a massive shift of mind. Yes, it is. Like I said, it's one thing to have a faculty where you can, shall we say, mock up intention or whatever in a variety of ways. And it's another thing to think that you've got the all-seeing eye of Agamotto or whatever it is there, you project out.
About 5 seconds.
Yeah, anyway, thank you very much for that. It is a massive reconstructor. Thank you.
Have fun with it. Be blessed. All righty. Everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.